There will be spaceships available for everyone on the planet to be evacuated if they so choose. The ships will be vibrating at various frequencies to accommodate people who resonate with all manner of energy patterns. The spaceships we are speaking about from the higher frequency space alliance groups will be resonating more with spiritually minded souls. However, no one will be left behind unless they choose to ignore the invitation or call through fear and distrust. In addition, those who believe in the rapture may be teleported onto the spaceships resonating with their frequencies. So you see, they're rescuing in different ways and frequencies. So, and what people believe, they will be shown. People who are resonating, this is how they speak, in frequencies of a negative nature in thoughts and actions, such as those addicted to, they're going to go for it, guys, addicted to pornography, child abuse, spousal abuse, hard drug addictions, greed and lust, etc., will not resonate or be in sync with the higher frequency spaceships unless they truly repent of their actions, which to them is letting go of karmic and cleansings of what we call karma. Don't worry, there will be other spaceships for them too. Question Phyllis asks, how do people qualify to get on the rescue spaceships? Ashtar says this, evacuation will take approximately 3 days. First to be taken will possess a loving open heart, compassion, deep love, reverence, and praise for Creator. There's the praise again he mentions. And I thought, there you go, there they go, because that's what they mean. That keeps your frequency around you of light. And we see the light in the frequencies of the auric fields of people too. People can take their pets. No intolerance is allowed on the higher frequency spaceships. You can't be prejudiced about anything or have intolerance for anything. Some ships will land and crews with ascended ETs like Balthan will speak with the people. Then Sananda says to me, he stood near Ashtar and he says, telepathically with me, free will matters, openness and trust. It is their choice. The energy fields will prevent negative people from storming these higher frequency spaceships, as their negative energy will prevent them from getting too close.
You are listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala, your source for the uncensored truth regarding the human, extraterrestrial, global, and political agenda. Click the like button and subscribe to this channel. And now, here's Dr. Michael Sala.
Well, it's my great pleasure to introduce Mark Brinkerhoff to Exopolitics Today. Now, Mark has been around for many decades, and he has had really incredible experiences with a range of different extraterrestrial entities. He has met some of the leading personalities in the field of ufology. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Mark to the show. Well, great to have you here, Mark.
Thank you, Michael. It's an honor to be here with you.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about how it all began for you? I know I've read a little bit and heard one of your earlier interviews about you actually coming into your mother's womb at 8 months old as a walk-in to replace the baby there that was actually scheduled to pass through a miscarriage to not come forward. So why don't you tell us how that happened? What were the soul agreements in place for all of that?
Well, my crew, my friends and family crew, as I call them, and that includes Asteron, one of the beings that I'll tell you about later. These are friends from another galaxy. We've come together for a long time. So as we call them ourselves, twin souls, all together, working together as family. So we arranged this back in the 1920s. We're trying to get into, find a way to be here without really having to go through the whole birth cycles as well. We weren't sure how we could do it. We asked on the higher realms because we had no karma here. And as crew, we visited the planet in different ways on high realms, but we observed the planet since millions and millions and millions of years. We observed this planet being formed, and we've seen the turmoils have gone flipped. The planet has flipped a couple of times. So at times we would, more than one or twice. We came through at times to talk with the people at the time on the planet, and there were different races here, types of beings here from other planet systems, from other galaxies as well, trying to come to this planet like a I don't want to say a science lab. I don't want to say that, but they came here trying to make some colonies. They were very tall people. And so it goes into a whole different kind of history that people have not been told or shown. But the giant stones that look like giant steps in the ocean, let's say, are from millions of years ago, where the people were over 30 feet tall walking the planet. And we visited at times too, but I came through in a different way, not physically, in a different way. So I came. We came to try to find a way to get in, and it took a while. Time is different on the other side. There's no time. So what I estimated 1920s, because I went by pictures I saw, but I remember, and telling people, they said that was the time of the 20s. So I knew, you see, we were jumping, we were doing different things to see situations and how you get in. Here today, they call it a walk-in. In our time, and where we are, we call it transferring in. So if a soul leaves, we can transfer in. And so that's today what they call walk-in. So we tested this, we went to councils. There's a galactic council that's in galactics, different galaxies. So you can go through different galactic councils. We talked with them. Is this possible? Can we do this with this planet? And they said, it's possible, but we have to locate, you have to locate a body that will be discarded. That's the only way you can do it. And you don't want to be discarded so bad that it was in a crash and it's totally mangled. You want a body that's kind of a discard that something happens where it's not too damaged. So that's what we were trying to search. Then the next council we talked to was a solar council in the solar systems here. And we said, can we do this now? Because we work around the solar system and we've been to that planet. Can we come through in a different way doing that? And they said, again, yes, you can, but it would be better if you find somebody that you've known in the past, either from space in some way that's living there now. Try to find somebody in a family unit that you can go towards. So where it ends up, I was the one that was coming in. We found my father, who I used to know in space a long time ago. And he was born a natural mathematician. He wanted to be an astronomer, actually. He loved space. He was a mathematic genius with that. Just genius. I can't explain. I'm not that math person. I'm an artist. So we found him. And we thought, okay, 1940s, 1950s, it works. Enough that we monitored what the future would be. And we saw there were miscarriages. So we figured that's a way we can get something, somehow I can get in there. What happened is the day that happened was in April or so, and my mother was having a complications that was looking similar to a miscarriage. She was 8 months pregnant. And she went to the hospital, and I was there. I was way high above the ceilings with my guardian angel friends. All your guardian angels are different substances. They're not souls like us. And they work with us throughout times in different places. So I was with her, and we're observing what's going on. We have to observe first before we can go through with doing anything. So I was given permission with another council here, a planetary council, and that was where Sinan, who also works, comes through as one of the people that we're conversing with, including the galactic councils. So they said it's okay to do this, and when you go in, you know, I'm going to have no veiling occurring, because that was the part of the asking when we were on the planetary council. I wanted to be able to come in conscious with everything that I know from where I come from before. No veil. I'm not coming in for karmic anything. I'm coming in to help to get the soulmate aspect of my soulmate from this planet out and come back home to our craft where we are, and we're leaving probably after this whole solar system goes through changes. And I was given that permission because my wife, Phyllis, she's been incarnating on Earth for a while. Not a long, long time, but enough. And she's already gathered enough information. So I was going, they said, you're allowed to go and we'll be able to do that. So the soul.
If I just understand it correctly, you were an ultra-terrestrial.
Well, we're beyond that, but I get it. I'd say Ashtar is ultra-terrestrials. We're in that field, we're working with them, and we're beyond the 44. We're going beyond, we're into light. We're total light beings.
Okay, in terms of incarnating, you had to ask permission from different councils and groups, and this was your first physical incarnation, and you came just because you wanted to rescue your soulmate, and also you had an additional mission to kind of like help the planet at this time of transition. Yes. And this was all approved. You had to get permission to do that, and you came in with all your memories of being a ultra-terrestrial and beyond.
Where I come from, and galaxies before, and also planet systems in this galaxy. So I can look at people and see in their energy field. I can also see who they are right there. I can see them there, and I get their space name and everything that they ask for if they want to know, and where they came from last. And that's one of the things they ask me, people, when they ask for consultations, like, where was I last from? And I say, before this galaxy, or... And they go, no, like just before I got to Earth. I said, oh, okay. So it'll be in this galaxy or Andromeda or any other local galaxies. So it's interesting how it comes through, and I see it. I can see Akashic frequencies in different ways. There's different types of frequencies to the Akashic that people don't know. If you just know this level of this plane right here where we're standing, the Akashic frequency that person might tune into to see will be of this level. If you're coming from where I come from, I'm seeing Akashic frequency, not just this plane. I'm seeing beyond their other levels as well. So I can tell them about their space lives as well as other places. So it's a different thing. And people didn't know that. And that's why we're writing a book on this right now. We're trying to finish it fast, but it's levels of consciousness. We're jokingly calling it Levels of Consciousness 101. I don't know what the total name will be besides Messages from Sananda, Levels of Consciousness.
No, well, that's just a chapter.
That would be a chapter. Yeah, that's Phyllis, my wife. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So it's when I came here to tune into here, the soul that was, I don't know the soul that was in my with my mother, but we were waiting, knowing that this was happening, and they had machinery around at those times in the 50s. And I saw two nurses and a doctor, and I guess, and they were in a big room, so it's an emergency room or some kind of big room. And I was waiting. We just waited to see what was going to happen. And we waited, and sure enough, then machinery went crazy in the background. We're way up here high watching down. We see the lights going. And then we see an energy come out of the person's tummy. And there's a person on a gurney. I'm not looking at the gurney person. I'm just seeing the sheet on top, and all of a sudden mist comes out, a soul comes out, comes zooming up towards where I am high up beyond ceilings, you know, 100 feet up, and comes up towards us. And it's like a childlike looking baby, almost child, then turns into a teenager, then turns into an adult. And as it comes past us telepathically, he says to us, the baby's going to be born dead. I'm leaving. Goes. And at that moment, the angel says, telepathically, do you want to try this one? I said, yes. So I went down, zoomed over my person on the gurney. Lights are crazy, going crazy. And the people are rushing around, nurses. And I'm hovering over my mother, just hovering over this woman. And I'm looking, I said, I can work with this. So the angel says, you got to get in now, then you're going to work. So I tell people how this connection occurs. It's people think you just go in. There's a whole connection that occurs. You have to lock into frequencies, into that body that you're going towards. So I had to compress myself into energies, move myself into that form that I see, compress myself into the back, forming into the body here, connecting through this, the chakra frequencies of what we call the conscious chakras here behind the neck and going down your solar plexus to the back. So that as long as you get those connections, you are in. All the rest will fall. It's okay. It's like a body image of energy forming. So I went and connected. As soon as I connected, I waited, because the heart doesn't start beating until the creator sends a spark of light that comes back to you. That's the thing people don't understand. We don't just get in and start the heart beating. We don't have that. The creator does that. So that was all. This is all arranged with Sananda, who is creator as well. As I know, I'm going to shock people with this information, but it's the truth. And he wants me to tell the truth, the whole truth. So I wait for the spark. Meanwhile, I'm hearing nurses muffled from inside, right, the womb. I'm hearing them talking in a muffled voice saying, everything's wrong, everything's wrong. And then, but before that, the spark came, which was like a little jolt of energy, not painful at all, just a spark, and the heart starts beating. And now it's alive, the baby's alive. And the nurses are saying, everything's wrong, everything's wrong. We don't know why, but now everything's okay, we don't know why. And I telepathically said, that's because I just got in. But not knowing they don't hear us, you know. As soon as that happened, I pulled out from the body, went out of body, so to say, as I do, and I went out, and I'm my full self, and I'm watching, and the nurses are moving my mother, the person I'm gurneying in, my nun, to be, and they're moving her towards the doors to take her out. Sorry. Years and years go by before I was able to talk to her. She wouldn't even talk with me about it. Right? So then, Mom, when everything went wrong and son was all right, that's when I came in. And she would always say, someone talked to you about this. And, you know, it's my memory I'm trying to tell you. So as I got older, about maybe 10 or so, around 10, I talked to her at the kitchen table one day, and I said, Mom, remember when everything was wrong and went all right? She goes, okay, tell me what you remember. She was trapped with her sandwich, so I talked to her. And she said, but I described everything. And she said, no one knows this, nobody, just me. I was the only one there, she goes. I said, she goes, how many doctors were there? And I said, one. She goes, how many nurses? I said, two. And they were hoofing around you on the right side all the time, moving around. She says, nobody knows this. That's right. And I said, when everything went wrong, that's when that baby was going to be a stillbirth. You know, it was going to be born dead. That's what I told her. I didn't have the word stillbirth at 10. So I said, the baby's going to be born dead. And they were leaving. And that's when I came in. And she said, yes, the heart had stopped. They were ready to do a spinal on her, to do a cesarean. And that's what they were going to roll her out to do. But when I came in, then the heart started again. They didn't do that. They were just moving her to turn her on her side to do a spinal, she told me. And then the machinery went back normal, like something happened. So that was what had happened. And she told me that. And I said, so when they wheeled you out, they were wheeling you to a room, I assume now. And she said, yeah, they were moving to a room. They were going to do the spinal, just didn't start it. So that's true. It's a crazy thing, right? But from that moment, as other babies do and other souls who are aware, who come in maybe more aware than not too veiled. Some people are veiled a little, some are not veiled at all, but are given the gifts that they choose before they come in. You go through everything before running through what you're going to try to learn in that life. Because I've worked with some souls watching how they do that, and the angels, and you choose certain things you want to get through on that life. But also you can choose from other times that people have lived other past lives. You can also choose, oh, I want to be an artist this time or a musician. And these are the kids that come in with music knowledge at the age of 4 and they're just playing, you know, Bach, Beethoven, you know, on a piano. These are those kids. They've been there before, come back before. So they pick those as their gifts. And also, here's another one. A soul can arrange to have some kind of something happen to them where an experience occurs that will give them a shock, mostly towards the head, to give them a shock and that will be the moment that will give them energy and a memory of some sort that they wanted to know about, that they lived or something. It could be a past life, it could be a near-death experience, and they will come back with some of this information. And that was the opening they wanted to say, what happened, why is this? And they'll start progressing to go look for more information on why was I alive? Why did I come back? Or I hit my head and suddenly I can read minds or see auras. But they didn't get damaged too bad. We've heard of people getting hit by lightning and suddenly are totally illuminated with understanding and seeing auras and everything. And or seeing spirit bodies, spirits walking around, spirit people. That was Ingo. He could see spirit people that looked physical, and yet it shut that off. I had that occur to me in 1976, where I was seeing actual spirit guides of people walking in the wall, through the wall, and coming in. They looked like real humans walking through the wall, and they would tell me I was her aunt or I was her uncle, or give me a name, or you know. But I saw how weird that was, and how I realized even maybe Edgar Casey had similar things. You have to tune that down and shut it down a little, because you can't walk down the sidewalks and see spirit dead people looking like regular people. The other thing that's missing is their energy fields around them, but they look just as real as everybody else. And that happened to Ingo. So he tuned it out. That's when we discussed these things with Ingo.
Well, you know, you're talking about Ingo Swann there, who you worked with for a number of years. And a lot of people know about Ingo as a very famous psychic. Now, Ingo, when he met you, and I think you met him, what, in 1995? And
worked with him. 93, around
and
there.
And you worked with him for I think, 15 years or so, a long time.
Knew him for close to 19 years. We were close.
Okay. All right. So you knew him and worked with him, and he is known as a very famous psychic and involved in many programs. And you say that when he kind of saw you, he could see that you actually were this higher dimensional being that was compressed into a baby's body at the beginning. That was he talking about the walk-in experience? That did he kind of like psychically tune into that?
Yeah, first time we met, then he just met. One of our friends threw a party, a little small party with a couple of people, so that Ingo would be there and we would come to meet because he wanted to meet too, but she set it up, our friend. And as soon as we met, I had at that time a notebook I carried with me with art and photography of UFOs that are in it that were documented back in the 70s by MUFON, actually. But so she set it up. We sit down for a moment. I shook his hand. We talked for not much. I gave him my notebook to hold because I was going to go make him a cup of tea because he was thirsty. So I said, I'll get you a cup of tea. I'll bring it right back. And so I was getting one. In the meantime, he was flipping through the book, I guess. And when I came back with the tea, he had the book and he was closing it on his lap. And we were sitting chair to chair facing each other. Nose to nose, knees to knee, yeah. And I said, I was going to go through the book with you and just point out what this was or what happened then. And he said, oh, it's okay. It's all right. I've already gone through it. I see already. I said, okay. All right. So now I've met psychics, but I've never met a psychic like Ingo before. This guy is super... nobody liked this guy. He would know if you had a backpack on your back with a bottle of wine. He'd say, come on up, bring the wine too. Things like that. So he says to me, he goes, so it must have been pretty difficult for you to take all that energy where you come from on those high realms, high planes, compress all into compression to shrink yourself down and get into that little baby inside the womb. And I said, yes. I said, nobody knows that except Phyllis. And he says, oh yeah. And you got in and the other soul left. He says, you're your own higher self here, aren't you? I said, no one knows that except Phyllis. Yes. I'm not an aspect of my higher self from the higher planes coming through to this level. Yes. But I'm connected right to my over part, my over soul. But to come through these levels, we have to come through in different aspected forms. So most people are an aspect of the higher self, who's an aspect of the oversoul on the higher planes. And they can be in different places too. So I won't go into that right now, but it's multi-interesting. So he says, did you ever get claustrophobic? And I said, actually, yes. And that's the exact same thing that happened to me when I had the moment of claustrophobic experience. I was compressing myself in. And it was very claustrophobic for a moment. Once I connected in, it felt very tight for me. And I had to move out. And that's when I moved out. And I would connect back and forth, like most actually souls do this when the babies are being formed in the womb. It will come back and forth out and go back in. And so they hear everything too in their own way. The music is nice, arguing not, but people talking to the mother, to their tummy, the baby can hear the muffling sounds and intuitively and psychically in that way or telepathically know what they're saying. No matter what language we are speaking on the planet, the baby, we all telepathically know what the words mean to us in our languages. So he said, so when you got in, the other baby left, the other soul left, and that was your experience. He said, you are the walk-in. I said, yeah, I came in. That's how I come in. We call it transferring in. And I have, he actually said, you've never been here before to be born, have you? And I said, no, this is the first. But you visit, he goes, many, many times. I said, yeah, well, we station ourselves far out in your solar systems. And we can come through and watch with our scouts or what we call SONS, S-O-H-N, basically those spheres that people see, those silver spheres in the sky, which would always follow me up at the school field where I used to be and living as a kid. I was on the ship in 1958, physically. So these ships, the Sans, could be 30 foot diameter, 20 foot diameter. They can make them smaller. They can look also, some of these other ones look like monitoring devices. In the 60s, we used to call them a probe device, like a monitor. And you'll see spheres come by and disappear. Visiting people say, I took a photo of a little sphere flying over the tree. And those are monitors. They're like, they see everything that's going on. Now, we use the Sans like that. They also go in and out of the water. They can be different colors, gunmetal gray, white, pearl, pink, purple, blue, green, gold. They will make a color form on their ships if they want to get to your attention. We've even seen hot pink. So I come from the 12th plane to come through to these planes. So the 12th plane, most Earth, on people on Earth and thinking there's seven planes around the planet. We're the first plane right here, right now. And then we keep going towards seven levels or frequencies. And we always make it look like we're moving like that. But in truth, it's all around us at once. So we made a drawing as best as we could to understand that, what it means. Over here is the moon. So I wanted to show the moon also has the dimensional planes around it. Any solid body has planes around it. Planets always around seven planes. And then from that, we go into, these are the celestial planes. Then we go into the cosmic or universal or omniversal planes are way out here. Those planes are different. So we have 1 through 7 would be called the astral to celestial planes. Then we go 8 through to 10 are cosmic levels in the high realms. Then we go 11 through to 14 and beyond. I put only to 14 because that's about as much as we go, but the arrow goes, we're going beyond. We're going into the 22nd planes. Those are all universal into omniversal levels. I've been speaking omniverse since this. When I was a kid, I was saying many universes. I didn't have a word for it. But in 2008, I was calling it omniverse. And I think people were saying multiverses, but it's all the same thing. It just means there's many universes that we are not even seeing. But these levels, we connect to the other multiverses through these higher planes and densities, finer
densities. Can you explain in terms of extraterrestrials? I mean, you actually had some physical contact experiences with extraterrestrials. You mentioned, I think it was 1958, you were taken into the craft. Now the craft is a physical thing and yeah. You had a physical interaction with these extraterrestrials. And I think you described Aetherians.
They're my friends. They're my own self came to get me in 1958. But as a child, in that, even though I had knowledge, I had the child mixed consciousness as well with the five-year-old thoughts. Although I had knowledge when I was 4 years old as well, and my dad would ask me questions. I had knowledge of the solar system, which he was, how would you know that? So I told him there was 12 planets, including the one that blew up between Mars and, I said, big planet and a little red planet. That's at 4 years old, I was telling him that. And he says, that's Jupiter and Mars. You know, so I said, that was a big planet and it blew up and the people on it caused it to blow up. That's why you'll hear space people saying, we're never gonna allow another planet to blow up because it off balances the system. And our own moon, this Earth moon, was brought in to balance with the system. And it was brought in from another areas in space. It was created inside, it's like a spaceship. So it can be moved and monitored and it's stationed to stay locked the way it is around the planet, doesn't rotate. Same with Mars, the Phobos and those moons. Are fake. They're fake. They're just looking like asteroids or something. Yeah.
But my question is, these crafts, where are they in terms of this hierarchy of planes that you described? I mean, you know, you describe coming in as a spiritual being, that you're your own higher self, and you came in as a spiritual being. Now these spacecraft, you know, what are they? I mean, because they're physical things and you're talking about a spiritual experience. So how does the craft fit into all of that?
That's a good one. That's a good question. When we're talking about levels within a plane, and we have I might have something to show later. I'm not sure. If we show one of these as an example, these are the planes, and they're just dimensional planes and big planes. Inside each plane are 12 levels. In the ancient times, they might have said 7 levels within a plane, but that's ancient times people thinking that. There's 12 levels. And if we go to the first plane, which we're in right here, and this is part of the first plane, we're on the first plane of the first level of the first plane. So we're on the first level within the first plane. We have 12 total. All those other levels, or I'm gonna do it like this, like a ladder, because that's how people think in frequencies, so they're thinking that way. Second plane, third plane, we're going, if we're our first level in the first plane, then you have second level, third level, going up to 12. Those are what we call the etheric levels. And that's ancient as well. Etheric is just energy. So if we want to say Eisenhower met with the Etherians, he met with Etherian people who are physical like we are on these levels. Sometimes they eat, sometimes they don't need to on the higher levels of the etheric levels. And my crew and our Nanda and everybody, they were trying to, Phyllis and I were having so much trouble trying to describe all this in our lectures that they said, you're gonna have to go make something and create it so we can get an idea. So we had created, I should show, but this was an early version of just 1 through 7, just to give 1 through 7 level of planes, second plane, et cetera. And it's a little smudgy, but in those planes are 12 levels within them. And within those 12 levels are dimensional frequencies, densities, which our space friends call Proxima. Earth level, okay, this is, again, it's messy. This is my sketching. This is Earth plane one, let's say first plane. Here's first level, that's where we are. Second level, third level. Nobody in these levels sees the other people. It's just like we are here and we have people walking through us on another dimensional plane. But on their plane, they're as physical as we are. On their plane, they might be able to eat meats as well on the next level, second level. But they mostly, most people are more into the vegetarian. But there are sometimes they do eat some kind of fish or something. That's, you know, it's blessed. Everything is different than here.
Can you explain the difference between these planes and densities? I mean, there's a lot of people that talk about densities and that we're in the third density and we're moving into the fourth density. So how does that fit in with your explanation of these planes?
Yeah, this is what I'm trying to do so people are not, all of us don't get as confused, because sometimes they're saying planes and levels are the same thing. And even I said it a few times to try to get the understanding of it. And then we realized that's not what it is. So, you know, the first plane or level, no, it's planes. Like these would be planes going up beyond the 44 and going on. We're just making them in spaces around, but those would be planes. Within the planes are the levels. Holy smoke, each one has its own levels where there's ways of living on all those levels. Within the levels are more frequencies or densities that we call it. And we in space, they just gave it the word to use about a month or more ago. They say, use this word for now. This is what we call it, Proxima. And in the levels of the densities, Proxima. Many multiple levels or densities
within
not
the
levels. I keep saying, I keep switching. Densities within the planes and the levels there. So in the ancients, way back, they would say there are 7 planes around the planet, and each plane has 7 dimensions. They might say dimensions. Well, we're calling it levels because within all these levels are dimensions, other frequencies. There's people there. Just like people die here, leave their body, and they go to the next frequencies for the heaven realms, which are levels
planes, and
planes. Again, the same thing. There's levels and planes. On their level, where they might be on the second level in the first plane, not ours, next level, they die. They're going to their frequency dimensional on their plane, that level where they are, into their heaven, which then takes them to the main heaven realms that we're all in space with. It's all different ways to live. It's not just this physical density on this planet, but on each level, in all those planes of dimensions, we're physical feeling on each plane and within those levels. It's just more heightened, more intensified or electrified in senses, like you can taste with your hands, and you can see behind you in your essence. And I know this is hard for people to even fathom, because I would never want to, I didn't want to go there in my past talks in the 80s and 90s. I didn't want to go there because it's too hard to explain and it makes everybody's head hurt.
But so right. Well, can you maybe explain, you know, with the Aetherian extraterrestrials that you've described meeting, yes, and also that you say met with President Eisenhower, what plane do the Aetherians come from, and what, and I guess what does, do they have a density that they, yes, inhabit in that plane?
Yeah, they could come from different levels in the first plane. The Aetherians are within the first plane, because we're densified like people walking around. On the other planes, higher than, you know, we're going past the third planes, we're going way out here, third plane to seventh plane, all that. Those are the heaven realms where you don't need physical dense bodies, but you have a body form that you have. We call it a glorified body form that is a physical density for us on those levels. And that's where we're in space with these levels on the planes up there, we're in those densified forms. So the Aetherians are only within the first plane. And that's what I think was confusing, not just people listening to me talk. I was like, how do I explain this? I came from the 12th plane to come through to the seventh levels and the 10th, 12th levels of the first plane to just come through into this density for this, in this first level on the first plane. The lowest densities we're in right here. This is the thickest and the heaviest in energy, or let's say physicality. And that's why everything's so heavy. Those Aetherians might have came from, and I, from what I recall from the time, because we were visiting, I was monitoring with our ships, we were there. Sixth plane. We're going to go fairly.
First level, sixth plane.
Those Aetherians have, I think, some of the qualities they have, because I've been writing this up for the last couple of weeks, trying to put this together for people. A sixth level is a lifespan of up to 600 plus years on Earth thought. Now, if you're coming from another planet, from their own sixth level on Earth first plane, they might live longer in a different way. Their lifespan, they had children, advanced children being born. This is around our Earth. Family units include souls that have incarnated together previously in addition to children. On the levels 4 to 7, there are no cemeteries needed. People transform to the next level or heaven planes. And there's deeper knowledge of creator and less food is needed on the sixth level. There's a part where we get on the seventh level where vitality is absorbed on things they hold in their hands for their bodies. There's no real eating if they don't want to. You can eat lettuce or something. They have foods there that are similar to ours, but much larger and a little bit different. Some of the plants and things are a little different. But most of the time, they're pretty similar to the Earth people. They're very beautiful. They look like space people. So it makes sense when I've heard people say, you've heard this too from old people 20 years ago or so, they told me they were from the future. Well, it would be like a future looking Earth if we went to that level. So if they said, I'm from your future, it doesn't mean your future, but I'm from a future level of looking. And I've been on those levels and I saw what they're like. So I used to call it as a kid, future Earth. But in reality, it's etheric Earth on those higher levels. So these spaceships come through these densities and they could come through on the plane, move through the densities because they have, we have the equipment on the vibrational frequencies, the sonic frequencies that transform the ships.
Just to clarify, you know, when you use the word density, that's the same thing as a level. So in each plane, there's like 12 levels or 12 densities. Is that what you're saying?
People would say dimensions within that level. And densities, in the way the space people use density, they work use it with sonic frequency, vibratory frequencies, and then there's a density that goes with that frequency. So we would have to say it's a density in energies of the etheric frequency. So you're forming body frequencies, or the ship is coming through a density to form a density into that level. So people on the fourth or fifth or sixth level will see a spaceship go by. They're used to seeing spaceships, they fly in them. But when you get towards our first level in the first plane where we are here right now, all of us, we see ships come through and they just come in, pop on, dematerialize and go, or pop here and jump there, pop here and jump there. That's all shifting of their frequency with the density they're in, and they use it with their vibration frequencies. That's where everybody hears about vibration. It's all about the light vibrations too, as with their ships, because they're surrounded in that plasmic energy fields they put around them. It's like a plasma shield energy that is in deep space on these densities in this level that we're in now, first plane. The plasma is all throughout the plasma frequency, or as we want to call it. And that's what their ships are shrouded in, let's say shrouded in them. So we see with our friend Dan, and I have other friends in Long Island, and myself, I'm taking shots of my friends and their ships. They can manipulate, transform, and morph their ships into shapes so you can film them. And it's not the ship itself going from cylinder shape, let's say, and turning into these strange objects. They're moving that frequency to make it look like this. So it looks like, oh, look at that weird shape on that orbs appearing on the ship and all these shapes. They make that happen with their plasma shields, and they morph the imaging into the shields like we're looking at a hologram or something. They can make it like TV energies, let's say, to project it into their ship's energy field. They'll turn it from pink to purple. They can put a heart in on the shield like we've seen, we filmed. They make a heart to send love. They make purple colors. They make any color. So we have friends on Long Island for the last few years who are doing the things that the protocol I put up in the intergalactic mission website.com, a website where you can talk the words from space. These are space words that I've been given since I was a little kid. I've been using some of them, and ones for healing. Niselik Mishumaku being a Tanaz for healing. And we've got a friend in Long Island who used those words only as she had pain and problems. And Yehoshua came through. Yehoshua, who was known as Jesus here in Sananda on High Realms, he materialized and talked with her and said, "We hear you, you'll be fine." And two angels showed up, and another angel showed up and worked on her tummy. And things happened. Well, it's just miraculously healed them.
So one of the things that I think is kind of most impressive about what you've been experiencing and sharing with people is that you've been able to call in the ETs and their ships show up and you take photographs of them. And I know on your website you have some of these photos. So you want to explain how you summon them? I mean, and how does that work? And how do you then, you know, you take photos of them? So yeah, explain. You mentioned a little bit about it, but just walk us through the process, how the ships show up when you ask them to.
I can't guarantee they show up. In the 70s when I was working with them too, I put out a nonchalant energy, a feeling of, it's okay. If you're in the area, great. If you can't come by, it's okay. I love you. I would always send out love, talk and say love, send out a beam of light from my third eye area and the crown. Just send a beam like a searchlight out and really visualize it. If you can't visualize it, to friends who couldn't, hold a flashlight up and put the beam out. And with that beam, send that thoughts out with that beam, with your hands in love, you know, just sending it out like through your energy that way. That was one way. And I would make a flashing, I would flash the light three times like that. And send out benevolence and love. But I'm calling my own friends and family. I'm not calling any space person anywhere else. So I always warn people when you do this, if you're gonna call with the words Adonai Vasu Baragas. Those are the words we use in space. And Adonai represents creator. It's also one of the names of creator, but we know creator is Yahweh, the breath of life. That's how we know creator. And we speak to creator in that way in the high realms as a threefold creator, a being of, we can't fathom the creator. Creator is the only one there is. There's no one beyond creator and no one other than creator. So people saying there's multi-gods or different gods from the past mythologies, sources or source prime one, whatever people are saying, they sound, make it sound like there's multiple gods, and there's not. There's one infinite mother, father, mother, creator, and one big creator outside and within all reality. The creator created the realities. It's inside it all. It knows all of us. It knows every dust mite. It knows everything about us. We can't even fathom how it knows this, but it does. But it's also outside of all creation. And Sananda's told me, only the angels and the souls, we are the souls, the children, and the angelics, they were the first to come forth. They only know, and we only know, what Creator has manifested for us to know as the realities and levels or planes. After that, outside and beyond all that, is only Creator. And no one knows what Creator knows. And I've been told by Sananda, it is the known and the unknown. And we are within and we're without. And that's where there is no other. So we have our omniversal symbols too that I got brought back from the ships in the high realm, like the 12th plane and beyond. These symbols are light formed by the infinite creator before systems were formed. It's like thought form creation of meaning of words and beingness. I can't explain. Like we say, oh, love. Yeah. Well, love is all these words too. It's like benevolence, love. There's different ways that we say these things. So one of the symbols that first came, I was allowed to bring in. I see them on the ship. I touch them and they come down. I remember them. I draw them. Is a praise creator. That was the first one that I was told to bring in because there's nothing more important to all souls and children than to praise their infinite creator, mother, father, creator. Give creator praise and thanks for everything we are here, everything we've had and we'll have in the future. And the praise brings a light of white, incredible density light that goes up to the infinite lights out there. And our angels get blessed with it too. And when creator sees that, connects with us with that energy, it just knows one of my children is sending thoughts to me who loves me and knows I'm here, sends back energy and love that hits our energy field and aura into amazing blazing light. And with that blazing light, no negative beings come around us. No beings, no fallen anything, demons or anything can come near us because they can't stand the love and the light of the infinite creator. And when we're praising the creator, they can't stand it either. Neither can they stand the names of creator or Yehoshua, Sananda, or Jesus. And I don't try to use too many words for our infinite creator, but they're very powerful. And that's one way to protect. So if anybody is going to ever try to do a kind of a tuning into a channeling session, you better have that light with you. Praise the infinite creator. Praise with love. Thank you for everything you've given to me. Thank you for the beauty of this planet. Thank you for everything I see. Thank you for my family. Thank you for everything. And that light surrounds us. And the protection comes from that too. And that, Napoleon, the ships with that love. If you're praising the infinite creator, only the good ships come by. Those negative ones don't come near. And I've had friends who've experienced the bad ones, the grays and these other ones too, who've had missing pregnancies. They're passed on a lot, but there were things like that. So when you praise, I go out in the field and I give thanks. Even in the 70s and 80s, I was giving thanks to everything, to creator. I was giving thanks and saying, I love you. And my friends and crew, I know their names. So I would call to them in my mind and telepathically. So if you're in the area, if you want to come by, now for them to come by, the high realm, people on the high realms, they have to transform through their ships to come through, even as a light energy ball or cylinder or a dome ship or whatever. Those are manifested thought, reality, creation ships that come through. When they come over into our density or our, let's say, our physical plane right here, right where we are, they sometimes, now they'll form into a metallic-y looking ship with no seams or rivets or any of that. It's like, remember the Dave Eyre Sit Still, the original movie with the ship landed on the White House lawn. And my father had the movie on 1950 when it came out in the 52, but it was around 1958. I was about 5 years old. And the ship was there on the lawn and I started crying with joy. And he says, why are you crying? I said, because that's what they look like. When the doors open up and everything closes. I actually said to him back then, back in the 50s, I said, it's like, metal that has a memory and knows where to close. So that's memory metal. But I, as I got older, I used the word memory metal. They have that. So there's no seams on their ships. So anything you see with rivets or seams is not of that high realm. It's probably physical, either Earth people or some density like our Earth plane here that people are visiting from another planet system will have seams who are physical like us right now. And they're not all telepathic. That's the other thing people don't know. Most space people are not all telepathic. Most are in high realms, but sometimes these here coming in, they're not, and they don't do that too well.
Now, I know with some of the photos that you've taken, some of them look like metallic craft, but a lot of them look has this kind of plasma form, as though they are kind of like coming, as you say, from these higher planes of existence into our plane or into our density, and they seem to kind of morph around. So you wanted to kind of like explain how it is that you can tell the difference between these positive ships that are in our plane as opposed to the negative ones?
Okay, I think that's a very important one. People, this is why if I talk to people that are just our average people today, your neighbor, anybody around us that are not into this in any way, don't just go flashing a flashlight at something you see in the sky and say, oh, it's a good guy, I'm going to flash the light, and it comes over and hovers. You might be catching the attention of the grays or somebody else, or even our own Earth people who were up there who were also working with grays. There's a lot of stuff going on our planet and people here. And I'm telling you what I'm hearing also from the higher realm, my friends, where my intuition, my buddies upstairs, when they telepath to me, they might give me something to say. So that was one of the things they wanted people to know. Watch out, be careful. Always put out the words of praise. I love you to Creator and brothers and sisters. I love you, my brothers and sisters in space. I know you're watching me. I know you can see me. And I'm sending these words out. Adonai Basu Baragas. Say it about three times. Om Savasin Manurim Niselik Mushuma Kulinikna Shenekatakata Kathuni Shenekatakata Kathuni. I say them all three times. I put them on the website so people can see them.
Q&A.
And they're under Q&A on their intergalacticmission.com. I think you scroll down to the bottom. And actually, a spot where I feel my wife created a voice. Like a voice over thing,
audio clip,
where I talk about the words and what they mean and their meanings, where they come from. It's about 20 some odd minutes, but I've had friends say they listen to them in the morning. But when you're calling to the ship, if you're trying to get in touch, call for the high, say the high Aetherians who are working around our planet too. And these are people that work with Ashtar's crews. They can come through in these. Again, there are Aetherians within the levels, let's say 6, 7, 8, 9. But Ashtar is located on the planes over the 4th, 5th, and 6th, 7th. His crews work there, but they, because they're on those realms, can come through to our densities over here for the levels that we're in on the first plane. And that is how I met with one of his crewmen in 2015 in Central Park. And this was a physical contact with Bao Thun. And when he came to me, he was close to 7 feet tall. He materialized, he came walking over in a very slow motion because it was first time coming to project through in a physical form for him from an etheric level coming through to here. So it's not like he had to be born here. He was just materializing through. And it looks like he's walking through dense mud or cement. He took a long time to get over to me from 12 feet or so away, but he's walking super slow and smiling. And he sat down, he made sure I knew he was a physical person. He leaned onto my tote bag I had with me with my camera equipment in it. And in Central Park, you have to hide everything. This is a little tote bag you would lug and carry. He put his knee to it, leaned it and pushed it. And so it was pushed into me to let me know. But in New York, nobody just comes and sits in a bench next to you and has all empty benches. People would go, oh, that's weird, they'd leave. But me, I saw him coming towards me, white light aura, totally white, smiling. And I said, this kid, he's got a great energy. What a benevolent, loving kid. Because he looks 23 or 4. I'm 69, so he looks 23. So I'm like, what a good looking, nice kid, you know? And then he sat there and did that. He says, he wanted to interview me. So there's a whole story. I think I put it on the website on the Galactic Mission under ET Encounters. When he was ready to leave, we were telepathic, but he wouldn't let me ask him certain questions. He was blocking, and they can do that. They can block you from the thought you want to say and push it back as if it meant not a big deal. That's exactly what he was doing to me. I was going to say, who sent you? Where are you from? Push it back over here. It's like, oh, that's not so big a deal. Something. And I kept going, but I want to ask you who he is. So they can do that as a test for us. Meanwhile, what he was doing to me was scanning me with a metallic object that he pulled out of his lapel. And the suit, the clothing he was wearing was very modern looking, not of this earth. He even had a slip-on shoe. It was all silver gray. It was 90-something degrees in Central Park. It was sweltering. And I thought, this kid must be sweltering in his outfit. But he says, mind if I didn't pull out of his lapel a cylinder that looked like a sterling silver lipstick-shaped container, that small little cylinder of, I don't know, 2.5-3 inches long at the most. And he shows it to me, and he's like, it's a microphone, right? He starts bringing it to my face like to talk. Then he scans me. He's going like this all around me. While I'm talking, he said, just, he asked me a question. He says, I said, what do you want me to talk about? He says, well, what about what's happening right now? That's what he said to me. And I'm looking at him saying, right in my head, I'm going, right now, an odd-looking kid, a very beautiful-looking kid with elongated eyes, perfect teeth, perfect skin, not a pore, not a flaw on his skin, not a wrinkle, is talking to me, or what you want me to talk about, what's happening right now on planet Earth? And then he goes, I said, do you want me to talk about what's happening around the planet? He says, whatever you want. So I was telepathically picking up what's happening right now with him. So I didn't hit that section of questions because I was a little nervous thinking, well, if this is an Earth kid, I'm going to sound really crazy saying, Lord, you come from the ship out there? So he started scanning me while I was talking about what was happening on the planet at the time in 2015. And he's going all around my solar plexus. He's coming back up like this. And he put it right here as if I'm talking again. There's no holes or anything in this thing that's not a microphone. And he's going around again. And he stopped there again. I kept talking. And then I had nothing to talk about. So I said, I can't think of anything else to talk about. And he says, that's okay. I just needed you to talk and just talk, just keep talking. And so that's when I got the thought, because I know how they work in space, that they wanted my frequency through my mouth talking my words. So I realized it didn't matter what I said. That's what he actually says to me. As long as you talk, that doesn't matter what you say. And I'm going, so now he's scanning still. Now it's about coming to an end. He would look at me while I was talking and look at my eyes and then look up to the sky, look back in my eyes, look up to the sky and smile like that. I said to him telepathically, even while I was talking, I said, I know they're up there. I know Ashtar and his friends are up there in his invisible ships. And he would smile and then like that. So that's when I was feeling it's him from the crews on Ashtar's ships. And then when I was going to ask him again, who are you? They blocked. He pushed it back. I finally telepathically heard, I have to leave now. And so I sat back straight, and he was right near me here, and he was tall, sitting in the chair, the bench. And he leans back, and he says, I'm going to have to go now. And I said, I know. Telepathically, I said, I know you can't stay that long, because they can't. They can be here for a few minutes and be with us and then go. He takes this microphone thing with a black, tiny, thin thread that went into his lapel. Not a wire, it just looked weird, it's strange. So he puts it back in, there's not actually no bump anywhere where he put it. He had no pockets here, you know, it's slit pockets. And sorry about that. So what happened is he puts this into his lapel, gets up, and I said to him, thank you. Thank you for coming, thank you for being here. And sorry about that. I don't know why it's still ringing. We usually unplug these things. So I shook his hand. And he puts his hand out like he didn't know how to shake a hand. He was putting his hand like, I have my hand like that. So he's going like this. He didn't know what to do. And I turned my hand like this. Now, space people touch palms for connection. And I teach people this. So you'd be touching your palms like palm to palm. No thumbs or anything like that, just because some aliens don't have a thumb. and you just touch palm to palm. So when I put my hand more flat, like that, he came towards me with the same, to touch my palm to his palm, and I put my thumb just gently over his hand, and I shook it, and I said, God bless you, and thank you, I love you, you know, whatever. And he said, thank you, I love you, God bless you too, and took his hand away. We held it. His hand was huge next to my hand, very big. As he turns to walk away, super slow, in slow motion, walking away, I suddenly sat up and stood up and took the camera, because people have said to me, you never get a picture of anything. I said, I got a camera. So I grabbed the camera out of the bag, and he's walking away from me, like 6 feet away. He's walking away very slowly. And I'm aiming the camera to just take a picture of him walking away. And I heard telepathically from the crew, don't interrupt his energy field. Put that down. Okay. So now I just observed him, followed him a little bit. I observed him walking past people, talking on the sidewalk with two dogs. The dogs did not react to him. Normally, dogs look at people as they go by. They didn't do anything. They didn't sniff the air. He walked within 2 feet of them. Then he walked around towards another area. It took him a while to walk slowly past people with baby carriages near baby playing ground. Nobody looked up. This guy was tall. Nobody looked at it as if they saw him. So I realized I was the only one who was allowed to see him, because they've told me in the past, those who see who we want to see, including spaceships. You could see a spaceship and people around you, and you'll see it, and nobody sees it. What are you looking at? We've had that in the city. You don't see that? You go, no. So he walked around the curve of our 85th Street area here up in Central Park and just disappeared. And I was going to call my wife right there. I was on this grassy zone in the park. I was going to call her on my cell phone. And as I was getting ready to say, this guy just disappeared. I heard the crew, why don't you go stand by the tree over there where you have these, a lot of sightings. So I see how they push it back. Like, oh, that's, a, oh, okay, I'll go over there. So I went over there with my camera and my binoculars. And I made to look up, and out of this cloud comes a spaceship. And I'm looking at this, it looks like the Star of Bethlehem. It is so beautiful, with like a star, like a cross with sparks around it like that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful, thank you, oh wow. No. So I took my binoculars for a second, put them down, put the camera, zoomed in on it like that, and I took a picture. And I said, if this shows up the way it looks in the sky, it'd be magnificent. But knowing that they like to morph things, it might not be that. Then I took my binoculars, looked at it close up with the binoculars. And then the silence engulfed me, which has happened on the fields when they come around. There's a whole silence. Everything shuts off. You don't hear anything anymore. You see everything, but it's not sound. We have traffic. We have kids squeaking, swing sets that are squeaking and making noise, but kids laughing, dogs barking in the distance, people mowing. And that was, I looked up and suddenly, time lapse, I'm still standing there, and I hear, oh, don't stare too long, too much time will go by. I went, oh, okay. So I took the camera, aimed it up, and the whole scene changed. Now there was a big cloud where the spaceship was, so I just started taking pictures, and that's the pictures you see that moved over, and I kept shooting it. So this whole scene that occurred was a time lapse in photography. From the first photo to the second was 20 some odd minutes missing. And when Phyllis downloaded the images, she said, why would you stop taking pictures for 20 some odd minutes? And I said, no, I didn't do that. 20 seconds, maybe at the most, for binoculars to camera. And she says, no, Mark, there's 20 some odd minutes missing. And until she downloaded that to tell me the missing time, and we saw the seconds and everything, it was then that the crew gave me a flash of light. And a whole, everything occurred right then. I saw everything. What they had blocked from me for that moment, so that Phyllis could experience locating this time thing, because they wanted me to download the information that I think that day, because time was missing when I came home from the park. All the clocks were different, change, you know, different time. So I thought the clock were all off. Anyway, that's one of the experiences. On the ship, I met Ashtar, my friends and crew. Sananda was there, and Ashtar came over and gave me a big hug. He's 7.5 feet tall. He was the smaller one of the guys. And the other crew was 8 feet and change. But that's when he kneeled on his knee and he gave me a hug. mean, they're huge. Can't get your arms around. And he said, now you just, he says to me, now you can tell them I'm real, because people were saying, is Ashtar even a real person? But he is. But he's a high dimensional being, an ultra-terrestrial, as we call him. And that's this is Ashtar and how he appears. And this is how I pasteled him at a council meeting we were at, an intergalactic meeting back in 2010.
And well, you know, it's just worth kind of emphasizing here that, I mean, you say you met Ashtar in 2010 and you had this experience in 2015 with a crew member of the Ashtar Command, but you got photos. You got photos of the craft, and that's important because, you know, people always say, well, where's the evidence for these claims? And you got photos, and that's one of the things I want to emphasize here, that these are not just stories, that you've got photos showing the craft of the beings that you've interacted with. And I think that's a good example, that this August 10, 2015 incident with this crew member from the Ashtar Command, that you got photos of the craft, this time sequence and the missing time and so forth.
It was a beautiful ship. And I was looking down from the windows inside and I saw where I was standing and I wasn't there anymore in the grass. And then I zoomed down. I want people to know this. When you're talking to the beings in their ship, they're usually people that look like humans in some way. This is Asteron, famous for his voice that came over the 1977 airwaves in England. He's like the commander for me. He's like my big brother on the high realm. So I've known Asteron forever. But I've told people at the time that were psychics where I was going to see in 1977, we were going to have a little UFO meeting in Yorktown Heights, New York. And he came to the car, voice in the car. Actually, they shut my headlights off 3 times. I pulled over in the black skies and I said, yes. And they said, oh, get in the car, we'll talk to you. So Asteron's voice came in and he said, tell your friends my name because we're gonna do an experiment. And so spell it like this, Asteron, and just tell them when you get to the meeting, to write this down because there's gonna be something happening.
So this is the same guy that was transmitting a message in 1977 that went across British ITV at the time, and people heard him giving a message on behalf of the Ashtar Command. So Asteron is the same person who did that message, you're saying?
Yes, Asteron, and it was the Asteron, not Ashtar, and that's what people were confused. But I have Ashtar here with Asteron to show, these are the old clippings that his voice, his name is here, Asteron. And the people a week later called me to say that his name is in the paper. And we would not have known that if you hadn't told us that a week before, that they were gonna do an experiment. So what they did, we're talking 12th plane, up where I come from, my home space was right there. Asteron is on the 12th. Ashtar works with all of us and we work with him, but we're not part of his group or intergalactic command as he has. But his crews transmigrated that message from our high planes to these planes to come through to our physical densities and reality here through a television broadcast or radio as well. So that's what was happening back then. And this, that's a whole different thing you can get into with them. And we have a segue for that now, thanks to Phyllis, well, reminding me of a message from Ashtar, Ashtar Sharan, and Sananda, who I lucidly remote view from the 12th plane. And I think that's where I was trying to show people about the cosmic realm level of the 12th plane. Oops, here we go. Back here. This is where I remote view from Sananda and my crew and all those people that I talk about. As for Ashtar, we asked if he could come through, and his oversoul connects to my oversoul in the 12th plane. And then I was talking through my oversoul to Ashtar visually and to Sananda visually. So I don't have an image of that what looks like a projection. If I'm sitting here, I would have a projection here to my oversoul on 12th plane. It all works within the seed atom. I teach about the seed atom, which everyone has. That's how I connect. But then I'm standing in the body form of myself on the high plane, on the whole 12th plane. knowing I'm sitting here in a chair or on a sofa, I'm speaking through them telepathically and watching, and either standing in front of me as Ashtar would be, or sometimes a visual screen effect of Sananda or whoever I'm speaking with, and we're talking telepathically to each other, and I watch their mouths move when they speak, so I can get the words down as well. This is what happened one day in May. So I told a friend of ours we were going to be maybe in a UFO alien panel at New Life Expo. That was in June of 2022 out on Long Island. And Phyllis said to me, well, why don't we, can you get a message from the crew, or can you tune up? Maybe they can get a message from Ashtar. We can put into something to read for the panel. And we asked, and they said, sure. So I had to wait for my over part to connect, to get Ashtar's connection in. So here's what I got. The topic was on disclosure, what is really going on and what they haven't been telling us. That was the topic. Oh, if you want to read this part.
You don't have to read that.
Okay. So I spoke with my oversoul on the 12th plane and asked if he could contact Ashtar for comments and questions. He said, sure. Sent out a telepathic message to Ashtar that I'd like to speak with him for the UFO alien panel. Ashtar knows I'm currently living on Earth. He knows I'm here. And I go out to his ships too and work there for fun, and agreed to communicate on the topic. So the information he said to me through me as I was saying what he was telling me to say, Phyllis wrote down everything, my wife. So she copied down anything I said. Message from Ashtar, and Sananda tunes in after. He's standing right there with Ashtar. He's kind of off about 5 feet behind him, just standing there watching, smiling. But then he had something to say later. I lucidly remote him on the 12th plane, May 23rd, 2022, for the UFO panel, June 4th, 2022. Ashtar, all the governments are putting out false, confusing information intentionally about disclosure. The question we asked him was that question, what are they not telling us? Most of the governments have had contact with ETs, but not always from the good ETs. There are emissaries who trade for resources. Some ETs are claiming to be from the Pleiades area, but are not. That I know also from the other side working with them. Part of the depopulation agenda is to prevent the storming of the Dumbs, which are deep underground military bases, people know, and residences of the elite. The elite are worried worldwide. Disclosure is a partial distraction. I'm just going to take a sip of tea for a second, guys. I didn't expect this message at all. Phyllis asked the question, will any useful information come out? Ashtar responds, son. Phyllis is asked, are they trying to set up ETs as saviors of mankind? Ashtar, no. They're making us into adversaries you need protection from. Telepathically, he showed me the way that they could project into the sky, the information they wanted to show in the sky is like holographic imaging to show dangerous UFOs. So he was showing how sometimes they could do this. They might try that. Ashtar adds here, by the way, most people are talking about the event. At that time, Phyllis and I, when they said the event, I was not sure what he was talking about. There's so many events that we hear about. So he says, by the way, most people talking about the event are not correctly informed. It will be a magnetic pole reversal and micronova on the sun, a real extinction level event around or before 2046. He gave us a date. Normally they never give us dates at all, which is kind of not the rules, but he says to me, I didn't give you the date. I'm just giving you a time lapse in times around or before, so-and-so. So it could be 25 years, could be 20 years, we don't know. Question. Phyllis asks, how will your intergalactic command help? Ashtar, about a year or less before the event, we will broadcast over the planet's public airways, like we experimented with in November 26, 1977, over the BBC in Southern England. So I didn't expect him to say all this. So he shows us, so Phyllis and I at that time, we put in the clippings, which we showed you before, on this to show people in their levels or things. Question. Oh, I have a special note. Okay. There will be spaceships available for everyone on the planet to be evacuated if they so choose. This is from the crew, my crew. The ships will be vibrating at various frequencies to accommodate people who resonate with all manner of energy patterns in their auras and bodies. The spaceships we are speaking about from the Higher Frequency Space Alliance groups will be resonating more with spiritually minded souls. However, no one will be left behind unless they choose to ignore the invitation or call through fear and distrust. In addition, those who believe in the rapture may be teleported onto the spaceships resonating with their frequencies. So you see, they're rescuing in different ways and frequencies. So, and what people believe, they will be shown. People who are resonating, this is how they speak, in frequencies of a negative nature in thoughts and actions, such as those addicted to, they're gonna go for it, guys, addicted to pornography, child abuse, spousal abuse, hard drug addictions, greed and lust, etc., will not resonate or be in sync with the higher frequency spaceships unless they truly repent of their actions, which then is letting go of karmic and cleansings of what we call karma. Don't worry, there will be other spaceships for them too, to operated by benevolent ETs. So that was my interjection to get people to understand, don't be afraid. And it's not just these people over those people. Everybody gets a chance. It's their free will if they choose not to go. Question Phyllis asks, how do people qualify to get on the rescue spaceships? Ashtar says this, evacuation will take approximately 3 days. First to be taken will possess a loving open heart, compassion, deep love, reverence, and praise for Creator. There's the praise again he mentions. And I thought, there you go, there they go, because that's what they mean. That keeps your frequency around you of light. And we see the light in the frequencies of the auric fields of people too. No fear is required. People can take their pets. No intolerance is allowed on the higher frequency spaceships. You can't be prejudiced about anything or have intolerance for anything. There will be a variety of exit possibilities. Some will be teleported. And in parentheses, we put that rapture because I don't know what that, but a lot of people know that word. They think it's teleportation. Some ships will land and cruise with ascended ETs like Balthon. We'll speak with the people. Many Alliance spaceships will try to keep their crews to primarily humanoid looking, who will be energetically projecting benevolence. They will be humanoid looking, like human looking people, elongated eyes, etc., like that. Sananda is now when he came in. Ashtar said, questions will be answered for people who have questions. Then Sananda says to me, he stood near Ashtar and he says telepathically to me, free will matters, openness and trust. It is their choice. It will be almost like a mild judgment call, he said. He said this with a smile, you know, like mild, to qualify for higher frequency spaceships. If you are really bad, you're gonna have to say, I'm so sorry, I did these things. Those who sincerely repent, he said, for their bad behavior can go, but will not escape their eventual karma on the planets in the future. Like murderers, if they really repent, they can go. But energy fields will prevent negative people from storming these higher frequency spaceships, as their negative energy will prevent them from getting too close, which is what they showed. People might try to enter, but they can't. They'd be buffered. They can't go through the frequency unless the souls who are of a thoughts of high light and love of Creator will be able to pass through benevolence of people. Start now, he said, contemplating the Creator. Keep your vibration high with unconditional love for everyone in Creator's omniverse. And that's how he ended that. So I wrote here, this is what we said here. We address the reality of the planes of consciousness in our book, Messages from Sananda, loosely remote viewed by me. See the chapter on introduction to multiple planes of consciousness, which we're working on. This is what we were showing you before. And it'll help explain what we're referring to regarding different spaceships and their crews. All the crews will come, you know, if they're from a high plane, seven and above, they will come through to those densities and levels in our first plane to come through like Balthazar did, come through in a form of a physical body. They can do that. And Balthazar, that mechanical thing he had in his hand was something that they utilize. And I've seen this before on ships, and I know what they do. They have either a wristband, or have a necklace, or something on their body that'll be their frequency holder for them to be manifesting as a physical right now in front of us to talk to us for like 10 minutes or more, and or 20 minutes or a half hour. And they'll just walk away and maybe dematerialize, or just walk into a room and they're gone. People have had that. Sananda, known as the one we know as Yehoshua, materialized in our room, 1999.
Well, you know, before we go there, just before we go there, I mean, you know, that message you read out is pretty powerful. And so I just have some questions about that. So, I mean, you say, or you were told that in 2046, up to 2046, in this next 24 years, anytime there's going to be a micronova event, which presumably is going to devastate much of the planet, and that 3 days or so before that, there will be this evacuation of the population or those that are ready to go. So what's going to happen between now and then? I mean, you know, if this is going to happen in the next 24 years, you know, what's going to happen between now and then? Can we expect the governments to do like a false flag alien invasion? You mentioned that as a possibility. Is there going to be some kind of partial disclosure? What's going to happen between now and then?
I feel they are doing a partial disclosure and try something like that. If not, I mean, the crews have already said, we've already disclosed to them. They just held it back from the people. And George Adamski as well, and George Van Tassel had encounters, and were real. There's other people, many different people. But one of the things the space people had said back in the early 50s, and I'm not even talking Valiant Thor, who I've met. So I'm friends with him and been on a ship with him and his crew. So there's things being said about him that are not true. And I promised I would address that for him because he understands what's going on here. And he is here sometimes, he's in visiting Earth. There's partial disclosure effect, right? But they're not telling the truth. So they're trying to build ships or trying to build things that they can leave the planet Earth with. Maybe it's something like they want to be on the moon. But with this occurrence with the solar, I won't call it a flare, but people might call it that, but it's not that. But a solar eruption, it hits the planet and the planet that's facing the Earth, the way the Earth is facing the sun at that moment. And that part of the planet gets hit with the blast of that energy and usually gets fried up in some way. You know? So that's when they went to the moon in the 60s. They went to see the dirt and the Earth on the moon. And it's got little glass beads and balls in it. Because that part of the moon that you see now is the one that was hit with the last blast that occurred too, 10,000 plus years ago, 12,000 plus. Yeah. So the Sahara Desert, I think, also has some kind of beads of glass in it. That was one of the areas where it last got hit too. There's many things that they looked for. But when they said they want to leave or building spaceships to leave to go to the moon or beyond the Earth, they're like knowing this is occurring. They know this can happen. And they know about the chemical reactions on the sun that they don't talk about that are happening that match the chemical reactions that occurred on previous stars at Novid and towards our center of our galaxy. The wave comes from the galaxy center and comes out and moves out to the outer arms of the galaxy. And our solar system is kind of located on one of the outer arms too. So it's coming through in that wave. And they've seen the micronovas on these other stars. They saw the chemical reactions starting before they novaed. Now they're seeing in our sun those same chemical reactions that have never been there before. Now they're seeing they're starting up. So they know there's something starting here. And you're going to see crazy weather. We're seeing it now. I don't talk about militaries or any of these hidden militaries. Or anybody, you know, satellite stuff, creating weather patterns. They do that too, HARP and all that. But there's patterns that are occurring because of our atmosphere and our ozone layers or our atmosphere around us is diminishing. Things like that are happening around our planet and the gravity is affected. We have all that occurring with the poles are shifting and moving towards each other, speeding up. So they're watching this. They know this is happening. And with that comes crazy weather patterns, lightning, like we have from the ground coming up instead of lightning from the sky going down, and animals getting electrocuted standing on the ground, not coming from the ground. And so tornadoes, cyclones, different kinds of weather. We might have, we've been promised by Sinana, as well as some seers, other seers as well, not just me, I listen to them, but people are seeing, they're getting stories of from Jesus or Sinanda or Yehoshua. 10 good years are coming. We're 10 good years are coming. And I hope that's soon. But can they stop? Can the Creator stop this from happening? Creator can do anything he wants. Yet I know that they said the Creator has set up on this dense first plane level where we are patterns to come through, energetic patterns that occur like a perpetual motion machine. They have occurrences that occur for the suns or the stars to expel excess plasmas and dusts around them, and that's a micronova, poof. But the sun is still there, the star is still there. A big nova is when the star explodes. But micronovas are blasts, and with that blast comes heat in the sun and the solar. So in Carrington effect was 1858 or 59, 1859, and that was a blast back then, but not this kind of blast. That was CME, a coronal mass ejection, a big blast. If we had satellites, they'd be fried, right? And they've gotten some of the satellites at times with these CMEs that we've had. But that burned out all those telegraphs and all that. The guys were working with the telegraph signals and everything. And the signals were still being sent, even though their machinery was fried. It was still sending a pattern out. But that, if we had one of those today, that would cause our satellites to go blank or something, and we'd be without computers and all that information.
So, you know, according to your information, then this micronova is coming within the next 20 years. But before that, there'll be 10 good years where I guess we kind of like get to be more knowledgeable about the different extraterrestrials, get more advanced technologies, develop our spirituality. But that means right now, we're going kind of through, you know, what are we going through? Is it like people talk about a dark night of the soul? Are we in the midst of a dark night of the soul, and when will that end?
I like that. I agree with that. The crew is saying that's a good way of putting it, because we've mentioned this similar ways in our talks. It's like everybody's going to experience this dark night of the soul feeling of being abandoned or feeling alone or feeling like what's been going on? Something's wrong. I've been lied to, whatever. Everything. History's all messed up. They're not telling the truth of histories. They're going to start to have a revelation effect. And I think that's something what Sinan and our crew friends have said, that people have to start focusing, stop being so into yourself. The machinery is a drain on the frequencies of our body energies, cell phones, all these things, even computers, everything takes energy. And those energy frequencies are utilized by negative beings or the fallen types, we call the fallen. All the fallen beings, as they had a war. There was actually a thing that happened in the heaven realms. And we go into it deeper in our stories, but I don't think we have time, unless another time, about why and what happened and what was that war about. Because as oversouls, we were there. They don't talk about that in the ancient biblical texts. They make you think that some angelic war occurred. Yeah, it was caused by them. The ones that were going, turning against Creator in different ways. But they wanted certain things and they were not going to be able to get it. Then the war went on to the souls. So a lot of oversouls fought in that war too, people don't know about. I'm talking from experience and memories from it. So I can't, Sinandi wanted me to share this information, let people know we're all powerful beings. We're not God, and we're not gods, but sure are God-like on those high realms. Yes, everything you think is real and all this thing. But we have these abilities with our, as souls here on this planet too, to contemplate, think, draw towards us what we ask for, asking the Creator in the holy names. I'm always asking, and we get a lot of miracles. So it's I ask for a miracle for some reason, or a pet, or a friend, or selves and things, and we need help. Thy will not mine be done, you say. That cuts the ego out. Say, thy will not mine be done, infinite Creator. But I'm asking this for my friend, my brother, my sister, or your son, your daughter, who's your soul, my friend, my brother, my sister. and including pets and animals. I talk the same way for animals as a soul, because animals have souls. So my cat was sick, I asked for my cat, your daughter, my little sister. I would say like that. So we can get that, and you say in the, and you say, thy will not mine be done, but I know in a wink of an eye, you can create all things possible. But I also understand, you know, who we are and what we are and what we say and think before we say it, and what's wrong with what we're doing, you know, what's going on with someone's karma. So it's your will, not mine, but I'm asking this on behalf, or in stepping in the gap for my friend, family member. And then I say, and I'm asking this through Yehoshua Christ, Jesus Christ, your son. That's how I speak. You have to acknowledge him who, when we acknowledge him, who is the one who created all this around us, we are then acknowledging he who sent him. That's how he's even told me that, let people know this, to say the full name and title, because there are many people pretending to be somebody named Sananda or Yehoshua on levels all around planets. And if we say Yehoshua Christ, Christ is not a title. It is not like, oh, I'm Christ. I have Christ consciousness. That's a whole different thing. People have been tricked around. Christ means Messiah. He's the only one. On all these planes and places, he's been in all the galaxies. He told me, I come through in a similar way. And then I want to also just clear that up so people know this, because I know I'm talking and people don't want to hear that, but try it. I have lots of friends who are atheists and other people, and they try it and you get results. Just do it with love, you know, and say, I just want to be one with you, Infinite Creator. I just love you so much. Be with me. I've levitated as a kid when I was praising God. That happened to me at 10 years old, flying up to the ceiling, just levitated and floated up with love of Creator. That's all I was saying in my heart. I say, I just want to be with you. I just want to be with you, and I love you so much. Floating. I thought I was going out of body. Nope, I was at the ceiling. I was looking to paint on the ceiling close up. As soon as I looked back, there was no one on the bed, so I went back down. And this happened to me in high in school in the sixth grade, too. Kids would tell me, you're levitating in the hall by your locker. I had my head in the locker saying to the crew, I can't take it anymore. I got to get out of here. I got to go home. And I would just say, please leave me home, please, please, please. And I'd start floating. I felt I was floating because I was tuning in with them. But kids told me, you were off the floor this far until we made noise and you looked and you went down. This is possible, but it's with the love of Creator. Anything else to me, levitation could be magic, which to me means playing with the other side, because they can do it too. They can float you up. I've been rescued by my angels and levitated 15 feet when I fell on steps that I should have died on. When I called out, Jesus, angels, help me now. Boom, I was instantly levitated and captured and brought over in euphoric love and bliss of God, the love of Creator. So I'm here to help people with that, because I talk with angels. I've met my angels. I see people's guardian angels, and I know archangels, and I know who they are. Michael and Gabriel and all these archangels are friends. We work with them on the high planes of space. And I think people listening in might say, oh, this guy's nuts. But I'm telling you the truth. And I'm here to talk that truth, to tell you who our Creator is and who they really are and what they mean to us and how much we love them. And we got to get in touch with them, connect to them. If you're not sure about it, start connecting now and just say, Yahweh, breath of life, Yahweh, I love you. You know the name, word Yahweh is within all our DNA and self. In the chemical forms, Creator said, my mark is on my children. It's in there, it's in our blood. We are, that's the Creator's full name. That's the Creator's name. And we have things we do on the ships too for that.
Well, I think, you know, we've gone quite a bit of time now. So it's a good point to bring this to an end. So where do people learn more about you? Where do they get to go if they want to contact you or contact your wife, Phyllis? How do they do that?
Before I go, I just want to show you this. This is one of the ships and the way they beam us up off the planets, just to give you an idea of what they do, just quickly. Also, quickly, just one more time, I forgot this part. When this occurs with our planet Earth, it's about a 12,000-year cycle that occurs when it does this washing occurs of the oceans. Souls that were trapped on the planet who had no belief systems might be walking the earth in a graveyard right now or haunting a house right now, but benevolent and friendly. And they just didn't know they've been there for 100 years or more. And other souls who have no belief systems, atheistic, they're in waiting zones on the higher frequency above this plane. they're in waiting zones. They think they're on Earth, right? Beautiful in their house that they had, or rock and roll, sex. They're doing all kinds of things. But they have no idea that they're not in the heaven realm. It feels like a nice place to them, but it's still not in the heaven realm. These souls who are stuck in these levels, or these little planes within the levels of the plane levels, and get along with these dimensions within the planes and the levels of the frequencies that are not high heaven planes, that washing occurs, they get released. Their aspected forms get released from home, go to the high planes. Their aspects, their higher selves, lower selves are connecting to call them home. That's the other thing I'm here to calling. We're being called home. We're being called home. And it's okay. You're playing on the planet Earth physical. You're into drugs and rock and roll and whatever is going on this planet. Stop. You're feeding the energy to those negative beings who are utilizing it around us. Succubi, incubi, those kind of beings are there. Focus on the creator now. Time's getting short. And that's my message. Time's getting short. And when I met with Sananda physically, who was Yehoshua, he said, time's short. Tell them everything you know. I said, everything I know on this planet, or what I know with you in the higher realms. He said, everything. There's no time. Time is short. That was 1999. So I got to tell people, work on your frequencies. Stop selfish thoughts and things. Work on helping, loving all creation. Stop hating people. Don't have political disagreements. This is wrong. There, you cannot have hate and love for creators. It's a hypocritical thing. If we love all as one, as brothers and sisters, forgive everyone. Start forgiving today, everybody, everything. Anyone ever hurt in any way, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Because everyone, and Sananda said this to me, everyone on these low dense levels we're on now, where those beings were cast to, are manipulated and controlled sometimes because of things they're doing as addictions. So they're manipulating. Creator understands you, we're being manipulated. So to get them at bay around us, start focusing on Creator and love and light, the crimson mystical blood of Christ. You can do that too. And we teach all this. I'm sorry.
Well, thank you thank you for those very wise parting words.
Sorry, Michael, people... I don't know how to get it out. You can reach us at our main website, intergalacticmission.com. The next website is etuniversezone.com.
Sananda's message.
We have seen a sign up there. It says messages. You click on that, you'll get all these messages that have come in. Good Friday message and things. Information on detox and formulas and things. And what else I think I got? I'm asking Phyllis because it's like so many photographs of UFOs.
Well, that's on Intergalactic.
Intergalactic Mission is on UFOs and photos.
Messages
are
on
ET Universal Zone.
Mark Brinkerhoff,
And my art site is markbrinkerhoff.com. That's an art site where you see my art. That's a mystic artist, I guess.
An animal artist.
Okay, well, thank you. I'll put those links in the description to this video. So I want to thank you, Mark, and thank you, Phyllis, for helping out in the background there.
Thank you.
I look forward to talking another time.
Thank you. God bless you. Ad nebas superabas.
You have been listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe to this channel. Join or start a conversation in the comments. Take the time to explore the vast library of best-selling books, webinars, and podcasts by Dr. Sala. Visit exopoliticstoday.com.